Got my own bill up in front of judiciary, so what?
Anybody else in legislature except me would have come second.
Mr. Chairman, are we in order?
We're in order, go ahead.
Okay, you've got a bill before you called, House Bill 649, is it? It's giving the elected public officials the option of going in or out of the now mandatory retirement system, and to be very brief and very frank, I don't like the idea of being mandated to retire when I don't plan on retiring from the state system. That's number one objection. Number two is I need the extra bucks that it's taking away from me right now. It's already taken over $300 of my money, and I want to get that back. So if I miss that in my bill, I'd appreciate it if you could make it mandatory to, you know, maybe give whoever's administering this thing, let them keep 10% of the total amount they've already taken from me for administration costs and give me the rest back, because I don't want, you know, I don't want it. And if I'm given the opportunity, I would like to opt out of the mandatory retirement program. That's basically what's behind the bill. I think public officials ought to be given the opportunity to decide on their own rather than be told by a bill like this that they are in fact participants.
Are there any questions? You mean an elected public official?
An elected public official.
No questions?
Is that it?
That's it.
Thank you.
Easy to deal
Mr.
with.
Mr. Gates?
Pardon? We're easy to deal with. You made your point clear.
You didn't get the bill.
I think the voters are going to opt us all out of the process anyway. You're looking for something?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the sponsor made it quite clear what his intent was. Certainly what the thrust of the legislation, what has been included in this bill, would accomplish the sponsor's desired result. I question that maybe this is the best overall approach. Right at the present time, I'm sure you're all aware, we are now looking at legislation which would take care of a legislator who failed to meet some of the provisions of a retirement system. Since I've been director, this is the second one, and I'm afraid that if it's optional, like anything else, nobody does a thing with it until the time they need it, at which time they come to you and request a bill to be passed to take care of the survivor, take care of themselves in the case of disability, or perhaps more importantly, another bill that we're faced with is to try and retroactively include some who during their length of time in service merely failed to elect the option that was available to them. And for that, those reasons, and only those, I can say that a mandatory system, the desired effect of that is at a future time, you don't have to go back and create some kind of law to give some special type of benefit to someone who really failed to handle their own financial affairs according to the law, is what it boils down to. Other than that, I really don't have any comments other than to say we would think that in view of the system, the way it's set up, it's probably desirable to have it a mandatory system, or to have it completely non-contributory as the old judicial system was. Administratively, it would be much more difficult to handle a system where they may wish to be in for a while and then out for a while and then back in. This just is quite obvious on the surface, the problems it gives us, but they are minimal, I think, compared to the problems that undoubtedly will arise for someone feeling strongly against participating, but then something occurs which makes it very desirable that they should have participated, and particularly if they're dead, it's very difficult to do anything other than special legislation.
Yep. But in a sense, in viewing this, it would still be a mandatory thing unless the person himself opts not to participate. You would still take it out if he doesn't say anything.
I would have to look at it a little more closely, Mr. Chairman. I think this would require us to get a definite commitment on the part of each individual, whether it could be construed to mean mandatory without that. I think from an administrative standpoint, well, number one, we'd have to know whether to or not in order to see that the appropriate deduction is made, and that in itself would be the election.
Page 3, line 7, it seems to say that who elects to participate. This is the reason you're...
Yeah,
I see what you're driving at. But even, I kind of agree with Bob, even though I see what you're driving at.
I think you're right, but I don't think that really is that meaningful. The law, the way it reads now, is you have no choice to agree to participate. 7% shall come out of your contribution, 7% shall come out of your administrative expenses. Whereas under the other, it would probably be more of a payroll deduction authorization. And if authorized, quite obviously, you'd be wishing the coverage, and if you didn't, you'd just be out of the system. And if you were to pursue...
I can see some of the problems you're talking about in a person who's, let's say, well, now, you know, I don't want to be under it, but say next year or this year he gets reelected, and you think, well, Jesus, maybe I can, you know, do this all the time, you know, but... I can't see anything wrong with sending around a little slip of paper and say, check a box if you want us to deduct retirement.
My objection isn't there at all. I'm saying that from the experience that I've had with the PERS, which wasn't optional, I'm aware of two instances where legislators have died and left their families without either the proper benefit, where it was only partially handled, or with no benefits at all, and the legislature has felt that after the fact, well, here is a spouse without anything, and something needs to be done, and I'm quite confident that this will continue to exist. People by nature get so wrapped up in handling the affairs of others that they fail to take care of their own until it's too late, and then, you know, once it is, then you run into these problems, and that's what I think this bill, or if this were enacted into law, we'd be facing these types of situations as time goes on.
So my curiosity really has nothing to do with it, but who besides Lord, who is the other?
Earl Hillstrand.
Earl Hillstrand. Did we pass special legislation? I didn't remember.
We didn't, but it was discussed at one time, and it was finally decided that the widow did not wish to have anything done, I believe. But we've had a number of cases. In fact, right now we have, coming from PERS to the new system, somewhere in the neighborhood of only 20 legislators who were previously participating under PERS out of 60. So there's a third, roughly. But it seems as though once the person's out of office, if they would have already achieved the vested right, which is the case with several others, where we run into the problem of how can they acquire it once they're gone, and this is most common. Younger people do not think in the same terms of retirement as people once they approach retirement age, and then they realize what they could have given up, or what they have given up. So it's not something that we can say yes, definitely will or will not happen. It's, I think, more human nature being what it is. This is likely what the result will be.
The referendum repeals the new retirement system. What will be everybody's status, or what?
Chairman, I'll have to refer that question to the legal people. There seems to have been a number of discussions, a number of interpretations, and I frankly at this point don't have any idea what will happen. I can you know, speculate on a few possibilities, but there are some other things that I think, frankly, are going to have to be resolved in the courts before it's really known. Particularly for those that already had a vested right. Representative Miller's a good example of one coming in from another system where he already had vesting. And I guess there's three or four different classes of people you can look at and say that it would in fact affect them slightly differently depending on how much service they had, whether or not they had previously participated, etc. And there's quite a legal group of legal theories running around, most of them all opposing one another, so I'm not sure what's the right answer.
Pick the theory that suits your own particular thing best. Announce that that's the issue.
Well, quite frankly, I don't see anything wrong with an elected official. I think you should have the right to opt out of the retirement system if you wish. And I can appreciate your point of view where you want to look out after the elected official, because there are many times when he gets too busy, he doesn't look out after his own affairs. But by the same token, I still think it would be a mandatory unless he himself elects to opt out. If they don't say nothing to you, you take it out.
Mr. Chairman, if that approach is followed, then I would recommend that language be put in where it would be an irrevocable election. Because that, or otherwise we're right back where we are now. There are people that don't want to at the time, but 10 years later, either they're still in or they're already out, then they wish to have the coverage. And I think that if you are to go to an optional, it should be a one-time-only decision right at the start where it's very clear, and I think it may help future legislators knowing how to handle problems that may come up due to a person electing out of it.
Well, of course, you know, we can't bind what other legislators do. They can always amend the legislation to opt in or out back in again.
Correct. No, I'm not suggesting, but I'm saying I think if this approach were taken initially, I think it would be good, just as you have in your present law, that if you wish to claim prior service, that it must be done within 60 days of enactment or first becoming a legislator. It at least very clearly, I think it gives a person a better basis on which to make that initial judgment, that it isn't sort of an open-ended thing forever. Because then you get, I think, into problems such as we have experienced in the past. I think I'm just throwing that out as a suggestion, because as long as you have optional participation, as you go down the road, if you get into the funding of the system, it's very difficult for an actuary to know what's happening if nobody's participating until 2 days before they retire, and all of a sudden they're buying in all sorts of back service, and this can be a problem.
Right, this isn't an opt-out provision, it's a, you have to opt to participate, not to participate. But this isn't a mandatory thing under Section 7 that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, it's my mistake.
Any more questions, Tim?
I just wonder if we ought to change that Section 7A to read, each elected public officer who elects not to participate in the retirement system established under this chapter shall not contribute to the retirement system.
did that someplace, we didn't have to establish someplace else that 7% is the figure. You have to end a sentence in saying those who do participate shall pay 7%. Because this is the only place where it says 7%, so we've got to establish that figure someplace.
Thank you. Amended section 5. I think we can take care of what you're trying to get by amending section 5 to read something to the effect that elected public official may elect to not participate in the retirement system established under this chapter by so notifying the commission or administration within 60 days.
You're right.
And then over here, you just change each elected public officer participating in the retirement system. Same language that's everywhere else. Shall contribute 7% of his compensation.
What am I reading wrong? Because this seems to imply that you can either elect to participate or not participate right now. Is this?
Mr. Chairman, this is a new section that's being added. I think you're correct that since they're using 5, they're spelling out that someone has to declare their election. And for that reason, 7 can remain as is, and the language that's incorporated in 5 does the job.
Well, I think what Tim wants, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what Tim wants to accomplish is having everybody in unless they specifically opt out.
Right. This way, you're saying that they have to elect to participate. This way, I'm saying they're participating unless they elect not to.
And if we, in that section 5, we delete it on line 18, deleted participate or, and made it read, an elected public official may elect to not participate in the retirement system. And then, just section 7, change it to read the way it does every place else in the bill. Each public
With the exception, you would delete who elects to and add participating.
Yeah. Public office participating in the retirement system.
Mr. Chairman, you may wish to consider reducing the length of time as well, because if you get into mandatorily doing it, somehow, under the present scheme, there's no problem. We automatically, or your people automatically, set you up for a payroll. If you wait for a 60-day period, you can get into 2 or 3 pay periods missed, and if the person then wants to not participate, you've gotten themselves into
a refund situation.
Well, or at least a troublesome administrative. It would seem to me that a very short notice could be given as far as not participating. I think it's something that will save everyone a lot of problems right at the start. And then you may also wish to put in 60 days after taking initial oath of office rather than oath of office. Otherwise, every 2 years, you've got the problem coming up of a 60-day after oath of office, which is in the same thing I was discussing earlier.
Okay, anybody want to shorten that time? What do you think would be a reasonable time?
30 days. If we're gonna do it.
Yeah.
I've got some real doubts about whether we're gonna do it. But, otherwise, I think Bob's right. I think we're gonna allow people to opt out of that, and yet just insist on whenever they die in office, we're gonna see that their widows are covered. If they die after having sanitation is probably not nearly as great if they have left public office and been out of the public view for several years. And you don't have close friends who served with them, served in the last century at that time, probably less inclination to do that.
rest of the committee? Or?
I'm going to put no red. I'm going to put no blue.
I don't think we can manage one way or the other, other than the fact that if we do it, I think we'll like it. But we've amended it.
Mandatory unless locked down. You think it should be an irrevocable decision?
Mr. Chairman, that's just a suggestion. I think that unless it is, it's a problem. And it will continue to be a problem in the future. And as I mentioned before, I think typically what will happen is, and we see it in the public employees, the people that scream about mandatory retirement are normally the younger ones. As they get older or they achieve a certain length of service, all of a sudden they realize what they have, or they don't now because there's no choice, but they would start to see the importance of the retirement benefits, or where you get into a difficult situation is under this bill, after serving 2 years, survivor's benefits start coming into play. And so it doesn't have to be very long down the road when somebody becomes disabled or death, and if they've previously elected not to, I think under this concept, you're going to be faced with another piece of legislation to take care of an individual situation.
Well, I think that, you know, we've passed legislations for teachers and for state employees and whatnot where they can opt to go into the retirement system after they pay up to make up the difference. Well, we've done it this year. Of course, that was with veterans. Within the teacher category and whatnot. I don't see why we can't leave that up to a legislator.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what Representative Wallace is referring to is additional service. The basic participation, as long as they're employed, they must participate in all of our public employee systems. But in terms of buying in specialized types of service, that is correct.
When somebody, let's say, quits a job with the state, he's cashed out of the retirement system?
Not necessarily. If he requests it, he is. The only time he's automatically is if his balance is less than $1,000 or has less than a vested right in the system.
He's just had 4 years. He's automatically refunded, right?
No.
Oh.
He's only automatically refunded if his balance is less than $1,000. Beyond that, at any point, a person with 20 years can get refunded if he requests it, but he forfeits all his rights by doing so.
Excuse me, what did we do last week or the week before about the people that have been off work for 3 years that they could come back in? Did that get dumped? Or? Remember when you were over here last week or the week before when we had a bill in here saying that if a state employee was...
That was
sick leave.
Sick leave. We haven't done anything with it.
Oh, that's right. That was on the
sick leave. Sick leave.
We want to make it an irrevocable decision.
Well, I think if we do some of the legislature, legislature's going to come along and make it unmandatory.
We want to make it mandatory unless you specifically opt out.
Yeah, I think that's
thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Mike, do you have any comments on this? I suppose we had a fair committee substitute just making those changes. And I'll get one more. When we get the substitute term, we'll bring it back up.
Mr. Chairman, you might wish to take a look at the effective date clause on that as well, depending on what your desires are. I think that's one that just becomes law, you know, after according to a section, and you may want to put a specific effective date to go back to the time the system was established, if that's your wish, the sponsor was applying that type of a concept, or at least pinning it down so it were to occur at the beginning of a month or something where you don't get into a lot of payroll deduction problems.
We want to then make it retroactive to the effective date of the retirement system?
I suppose. If somebody wants a refund, I guess that's the reason they want to opt out.
I don't think they want the refund other than just not contributing. That don't play.
Well, a fair amount of money. Probably should, you know, if they're not going to participate in the system, they probably have to get their money back. Several hundred dollars over.
Mr. Jenkins, you want to?
Mike.
Richard? Did you notify Susan Sullivan?
Yeah.
She's improving. She's too
tall. Oh, I didn't realize that.
That was going to come out. Mr. Chairman, I presume we have moved to House Bill 526, the sponsor substitute. I have written a memo regarding this, which basically, I think, lays out our position, and I could answer questions if any of the members of the committee have any.
I have one. I thought the excess earnings during the year, as we talked about at the last meeting, was $2,300.
The $2,300 figure, I looked that up in anticipation of that question, since we had discussed it some length, is the point at which a single taxpayer would pay tax. Now, if a person was married filing separately, they would pay tax at $1,700 and some odd. Now, the figure $1,200, my understanding, is a figure that Mr. Betch suggested when he was called about this committee sponsor substitute. And that is a good minimum just for those few that definitely would not have tax. Obviously, it could be amended upward.
Where did he get the $1,200?
Well, I pinned him down on that, and he unfortunately used the last year's table, and that's where it came from. It had been, as a result of the federal legislation change this past year, it's now you don't become taxable at the lowest or the highest, whatever, you become taxable as a 1700 figure. He just grabbed
but the 1700 figure, that was if you were married and filing
separately. That would be the condition under which somebody would become taxable.
Other than that, it would be 2300.
Right, for a single person, it would be still 23.
Well, we give it the amended upwards to 2300, and if the minor happens to be married, certainly he could use the money.
Obviously, it could be done, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if you want to change it since this is the sponsor substitute, and I believe she seemed to think that $1,200 was acceptable. Now, maybe she did, and her staff did look into it in depth. But the exact figure, as long as it doesn't go above $2,300, we don't have a major opposition to, per se.
You think it does, though, eliminate any potential for abuse?
The way this is drafted, yes. Would remove all potential. Well, I shouldn't say all potential. It'll remove most of the potential for abuse that we experienced before.
Okay. Did you want to make that change?
Yeah, we'll move it up to 2300.
Now this would, there's actually two different controlling factors there. One is, as currently says, in excess of 100 per month, and then if a minor or in excess of 1200, are you changing just the latter figure, Representative Wallace?
Well, I guess we could calculate that out. What would 2300 be per month?
Well, it'd be just a shade under $200.
We couldn't use 2,400, I think.
Well, we could, but then they're in the situation where somebody's going to withhold, you know, a few odd bucks on them. Or they're going to have to, I should say, they're going to have to, they're going to be taxed, we're going to have to pay a few odd bucks, and they wouldn't have been withheld.
Of course, we could still say 200 a month or 2,300, because that could mean that they may just make 180 for several months, and then...
Had a good month.
Had a good month, something like that. That's... We have to figure out the figure.
191 some cents.
190,
yeah.
That would be acceptable. Yeah, that limitation there basically will wipe out all of our bad guys we ran into last year when we started seeing a real rash of the W4Es.
CS for SS.
Okay.
CS for SS for HB.
Just read the crossover as amended.
Yeah, we use it.
Do you know if there are any actual technical problems with it still right now?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any objections to that?
No, I just wanted to say that I spoke to Marguerite Stone in Anchorage, who runs the municipality's version of the Neighborhood Youth Corps, and she was very concerned that this kind of legislation go through, because she has all kinds of very transient minors who get programs through the youth program in Anchorage, and who they can never get their W-2s to. They send out the W-2s at the end of the year, and half of them, she said, literally half of them came back, you know, address the unknown. So she was very concerned that this piece of legislation go in, and I told her what was in the sponsor substitute, and she said that that would alleviate the problems that she had with the present statutes.
Everybody sees that as a bad thing. I see it as a source of revenue for the state. People don't play there.
All right, why don't we just move
for
it
the
up?
Record, I'm just kidding.
You bet.
Well, Susan, her testimony was persuasive.
Influence has long arms. Thank you, Gary.
What do you do with the other one?
We want to have a substitute for that.
Yeah, I'll
just get
lobbyist
for himself.
It's
the
same one we had in here. Terry was talking about we're going to start the markup later on this week. Is it just a foregone conclusion they're going to rewrite the bill?
Yeah.
I want to go get him on that editorial.
Terry's on.